You have discovered the Felon File. FelonFile.com is a podcast exploration and discussion of law enforcement, history, issues, and incidents in the Appalachian Mountains and elsewhere. Felon File is hosted by Scott Lunsford, retired police detective, sergeant, author and researcher. The Shade of Blue stories for Felon File today. The shooting of Sheriff Merrill and the first shot of the Civil War in North Carolina. Background music. Hard-boiled hosted by Purple Planet. Scott. The microphone is on and we're recording.
Thank you, Victoria, for starting us out. And thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Felon File, where, as Victoria said, we're looking at law enforcement issues, crimes, punishments, the good guys, the bad guys, anything along those lines that I find of interest, and I really hope you might find of interest as well. Today's Shade of Blue story for Felon File is another Main Street USA killing. This one occurred in 1861, actually exactly 160 years ago today, and about 9 miles from where I'm recording this podcast. After listening to this podcast, you're going to have to decide. I leave it up to you to make the decision as to who are the good guys and who are the bad guys in this particular story. And it's kind of three stories in one, but we'll start out in the beginning. Now, instead of starting in 1861, we're going to go back about 250 years ago from today to a man by the name of Benjamin Merle, Captain Benjamin Merle. He was a captain in the militia in Rowan County, North Carolina. Now, the good captain ended up siding with the Regulators during the pre-Revolutionary War uprising. It's also called the War of Regulation. And he was a father of 10 children before he was killed. Now, the War of Regulation was at first a reaction by local colonists at about 1765 to 1771 in response to local and state officials and offices in the Carolinas and their actions. They were angry over issues of what some considered unfair taxation, local government corruption, local government over control of issues. Sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? Now, at first, the colonial government, under the British rule, of course, did not pay them much attention, and they took little action in regards to their activities. Now, that changed in 1771. Governor Tryon said, well, enough is enough. Or whatever the proper phrasing of such a statement was in 1771. He took on the view that these guys and troublemakers were full-fledged rebels. And the governor ordered one of his men to start raising troops to deal with the situation. The governor's man raised about 200 troops to deal with the situation. Now, Captain Neely was able to put together over 300 troops. So when you look at that, just by looking at the numbers, we figure who might win that particular battle. Now, Neely marched his guys to meet up with the other Regulator commanders. But the Regulators did not know the governor had brought in men and manpower and regular troops from other locations and states. And they ended up meeting the Regulators with 1,100 men. Now, the battle itself of Almanac County ended up turning into a turkey shoot, with the governor's people coming up on the high side, and the Regulators were pretty much defeated. But Merle, Captain Merle, hadn't arrived yet with his 300 men. And if he had been there sooner, it may have turned the tide. But he arrived late for various reasons, and it was another turkey shoot when Merle did arrive. Almirall set up with a few others. They set up a delaying action for most of the regulators that were with him to allow them to retreat and escape. But 12 individuals, these men, these officers who were in charge of the other men, they ended up being captured alive. This included Captain Merle. The 12 were convicted of high treason, and 6 of them were sentenced to be hung, drawn and quartered, and executed for their involvement.
Excuse me, Scott. That's a bit of overkill, isn't it? But you have to admit it is very thorough. Pardon the interruption.
Thank you, Victoria. A lot of times we hear about being drawn and quartered. Well, just what exactly is drawn and quartered? The convicted traitors that were to be drawn and quartered were fastened to a wooden panel, or drawn or drugged behind a horse to the place of execution, where they were then hung. But they weren't killed at that point or executed. They were hung almost to the point of death, more of a punishment than an execution. Then the prisoner would be emasculated, disemboweled, beheaded, and quartered, chopped into 4 pieces. And his remains would then be put on display, oftentimes to act as a lesson to others. Now, it's documented by some witnesses that were at that particular execution that Captain Merle is said to have gone to his execution as a brave man. One quote by a witness states that Captain Merle was thought as a very pious man and was much esteemed wherever he was known. In this trying situation, he gave his friends satisfactory evidence that he was prepared to die, for he not only professed his faith in Christ, his hope of heaven and willingness to go, but sang a song very devoutly just before he swung off, and died with the resignation and composure of a Christian. One of his enemies was heard to say, "If all went to the gallows with Captain Merrill's character, hanging would be an honorable death." I don't know about that, but apparently he greatly impressed the crowds when he was executed. Now, Captain Benjamin Merle's great-grandson was a gentleman by the name of Ransom Merle, and he was the High Sheriff of Madison County, North Carolina, at the onset of the American Civil War. He was supported by many wealthy landowners and office holders in the county, and he also was the father of 19 children. He beat out his ancestor by 9. Madison County, North Carolina was created in 1851 from portions of Yancey County and Buncombe County. Marshall, which even today is the county seat, was incorporated in 1863. Now, it was originally called Lapland, Lapland, but was renamed later after Chief Justice John Marshall. Let's look back at 1861. Secession was in the air and was pretty much the talk of the day. Was North Carolina going to secede and join the Confederacy, or was the state going to stay in the Union and fight to keep the Union together? Now, in February 1861, the returns from the 1860 presidential election, the election of Abraham Lincoln, was thrown out. A new election was called for, but an election for secession, or not to secede. Now, on Monday, May 13th, 1861, the Madison County men voted in favor of calling a convention and for secession. On Monday, May 13th, 1861, 345 Madison County men voted in favor of calling for a convention and to secede from the Union. Yet, 532 voted against the idea. And then again, once more, the election results were tossed out. And when the convention was held, Madison County's representative to the convention for secession was represented by Dr. Joseph A. McDowell.
and Dr. McDowell voted to secede from the Union. Now, Dr. McDowell was actually from Asheville, North Carolina, and he was the owner of the Warm Springs Hotel, whose foundation still stands in Hot Springs, North Carolina. And the good doctor was also a backer of Sheriff Merrill at that time. As I said, 161 years ago, the citizens of Madison County, they met in Marshall, the county seat, to select delegates to the state convention to make the decision on whether they would basically be for the North or be for the South during the American Civil War. As is usually the case on Election Day, not only in the United States, but I'm sure in other parts of the world, bars were left open to help citizens fortify themselves to celebrate or lament the party's future. Now, growing up in Madison County myself, I was told several times that Madison County was a dry county, in other words, no alcohol sales, because of this incident that I'm about to talk to you about. And that was the reason why Madison County is a dry county. Now, I don't know about dry. You might dam up the creek a bit, but still, you can't keep a man from digging a well or catching rainwater. Yeah, figure that symbolism out, Victoria, while you're at it.
I would. But why bother? Sometimes, Scott, you're just a strange person who says strange things.
Okay, then. Anyway, Sheriff Merrill had been making the rounds about town, and by early afternoon, he was quite enthusiastic for the secessionist cause, not to mention being quite snookered, apparently. Sheriff Merrill celebrated with his secessionist friends, who were very quick to offer a little brown jug or a bottle, and the voters weren't at a loss for quickly obtaining a little bit of drink if they so desired. Again, including our Sheriff Merrill. Now, also in the crowd that day was a gentleman by the name of Neely Tweed. Now, Mr. Tweed was the first elected clerk of Superior Court in Madison County. He was a justice of the peace, as well as a postmaster, not to mention being a school teacher. And he was a unionist. He was for keeping the union together. And he was also the father of 11 children. And at least one of those children was with him at the voting polls. Now, you got to admit, these guys that we're all talking about sure did a lot of begatting when it come to kids and family. Sheriff Merrill was unable to contain his excitement and stationed himself in the center of town, where he hollered out, "Hurrah for Jefferson Davis and the Confederacy!" Now, the crowd standing near the polling place, several individuals yelled out in answer, a very equally passionate cry, "Hurrah for Washington and the Union!" Now, not to be undone, as is many a man with too much to drink, the sheriff pulled his pistol out and walked over towards the group of men where Neely Tweed happened to be. Neely Tweed backed away, as well did other people. When you have an intoxicated man with a pistol, you generally want to give him as much room as you can. But another gentleman, who apparently was quite bolder, or possibly as intoxicated as the sheriff was, I don't know. He approached the sheriff. Now, the sheriff noticed the gun butt beneath his coat, the weapon shoved in his waistband. The sheriff asked him why he had brought his gun to the polling place. And he wasn't satisfied with the answer that he got, so he swung his pistol around and pointed it at some other individuals in the crowd. And it said that the sheriff saw another man armed as well in the crowd and pulling his weapon out or up. The sheriff raised his gun to fire, and the man jumped behind the crowd, and unfortunately, the bullet struck Neely Tweed's son, passing through his arm and lodging in his ribcage. Now, that was the point. The mood of the crowd suddenly became very ugly. The sheriff may have been intoxicated, but he was still aware of his surroundings and the fact that standing on the street, he was outnumbered by some people that weren't very happy with him. He He ran to a nearby close friend's house for safety, of course being pursued by the Unionist men that were in the town square. They followed, and as he entered the house, the homeowner, seeing what was going on, bolted the door behind the sheriff, and the sheriff ran upstairs. Now, in another moment of brilliance, the sheriff opened up the upstairs window that looked out over the street and shouted out, "Come up here, all you black Republicans, and take a shot about with me." Well, in his answer to the statement from the sheriff, Neely Tweed fired a gun that he had received from another in the crowd and apparently winged or wounded Sheriff Merle. The town constable, somebody notified him, and he rushed to the scene. Arriving on the scene, he took stock of where the sheriff was and talked to other people and immediately rushed to the house where the sheriff was at. He was let in by the homeowner and rushed upstairs to the bedroom where the sheriff was to take him into custody, get him out, or find out what was going on. It's kind of unknown what his position in the matter was at that time. The open door, though, allowed some of the crowd in to advance into the house. Apparently unaware that Tweed was behind him, when the constable opened the bedroom door, Neely had a direct line of sight on the sheriff and fired before the sheriff could fire at him and killed the sheriff. It was at this point, as the old saying goes, all hell broke loose in the town of Marshall. Neely Tweed was able to escape by going to Kentucky, and he mustered up as a Union private in the 4th Regiment of the Tennessee Infantry, Company D, and where he joined into the Union Army. Unfortunately, while still in basic training, or what minimal training they had before they sent them up to the front to fight, he developed fever, and he never was able to return to Madison County. During his Civil War service, it's claimed by his family that he predicted his own death on a certain day at noon. And sure enough, he sat down on that day, April 21st, 1861, and died from the fever at Camp Gerber in Flatlick, Kentucky. And he was buried in an unmarked grave by his son, who was the same son that was shot by the sheriff that day, 160 years ago. Now, Ransom P. Merle was the first person in Madison County to be killed because of the Civil War. Many Madison County citizens died in that war from both sides. The county put out a reward for the capture and arrest of Tweed, but it was never collected. Tweed's brother was ambushed by the Home Guard and tortured trying to obtain information about where his brother was at, and unfortunately he was killed. To continue our story, in a strange twist of fate, one of Neely Tweed's son, 6 years after the shooting, this is in 1867, A.G. Tweed ran for sheriff of Madison County and won. This is after his dad had killed the sheriff. He would hold that office until 1883, 16 years, winning election for sheriff 4 times. Now, most everyone has seen the Andy Griffith Show, seen it around the world. It's been translated into other languages. And everybody knows Sheriff Andy Taylor never carried a gun. Or so they say. Now, neither did H.G. Tweed when he was sheriff. However, his reasoning was a little different than the fictional Sheriff Taylor that we have portrayed on TV. Once, when he was asked why he didn't carry a gun, A.G. simply said, quote, and I love this quote, "because I can have a man whipped before he can get a gun out of his waistband," unquote. Now, I guess people didn't carry or look positively on holsters a lot back then, but he was a tough man. Now, some of the people around here will tell you that the character of Andy Taylor, Sheriff of Mayberry, was partially based on Sheriff of Madison County, A.G. Tweed. Well, perhaps he was. Both are from North Carolina. Both of them were countrymen. But that's an argument for another day. Sheriff A.G. Tweed, he lived to be 82 years old and died of heart failure in 1907. His wife outlived him by about 10 years. She passed away while taking care of and tending to some cattle. Lord, you have to love a country girl no matter what country she's from. Now, to continue our sidetracks a little bit, and off on another tangent, one of the direct descendants of A.G. Tweed and Neely Tweed was a deputy, a full-time sergeant with the Madison County Sheriff's Department today, and was so until he retired. He was a sergeant with the same sheriff agency and was able to retire as head of the Madison County School Resource Unit for the Sheriff's Department. Sergeant Jeff Tweed, who still works in the school system, and I have the privilege of working with from time to time in the schools. Good man and a good family. And he works for the same office that his great-grandfather shot the sheriff for. Or is it great-great-grandfather? I think it's great-great-grandfather. Anyway, that's our Shade of Blue story for today. I hope you found it somewhat interesting, to say the least. If you have comments, opposing viewpoints, or would like to drop us a line, you can do so by going to felonfile.com or scottlunsfordauthor.com, or email us directly at felonfile@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. We're hearing from some interesting people from all over the world and getting some interesting insights on various sundry things, and we're very much enjoying it. So please don't hesitate to drop us a line. Drop us a line with ideas for researching possible future podcasts. Love to hear about them. Also, if you would like to help us out a little bit, well, we greatly appreciate it. You can go to, if you go to our website, you'll see a link to Buy Me a Coffee. It's a simple website that you can send us a couple of bucks to help with some of the research material that we get for Felon File, buying books and paying for court case documents from the North Carolina State Archives, some library fees to obtain copies of books and information from other parts of North Carolina and the United States and the world. You can go to the link or just go to buymeacoffee.com/felonfile.com and would greatly appreciate it. If you have some information and you'd like to be a guest on Felon File, also drop us a line on that. We'd love to hear from you and maybe get you on the podcast. If you have a book or business you'd like to plug, we're very open to that as well. So give us a call. Drop us a line. We'd be happy to talk to you about that. And in the meantime, in the coming weeks, until next Saturday, when we have a new Shade of Blue story for you, remember, be safe, be secure, and if you have the opportunity, most definitely do something nice for somebody. It's really the right thing to do. All right, Victoria, you can go ahead and close this out. I've rambled on quite enough for today. Bye, y'all.
You have been listening to the Felon File podcast with your host, Scott Lunsford. For more information on this podcast or Scott's books and writings, go to scottlunsfordauthor.com or felonfile.com. Scott can also be contacted at these web pages. Also, please check out our available stuff page, where you too can grab a Felon File t-shirt or coffee mug. There is also a link where you can buy us a cup of coffee that helps keep us commercial free. This is Victoria, your producer. Once more, thank you for listening. Before we go, a special place in Hell Update. Columbus County, North Carolina. A former North Carolina police chief charged with embezzling money donated to a child with cancer is facing more charges after a court appearance this week. Former Chadbourne police chief Anthony Spivey was previously charged with embezzling $8,000 donated to a family with a child with leukemia. In court this week was charged with more crimes in the incident. Several counts of obstructing justice, larceny by employees, obtaining property by false pretense, failure to discharge duties, other embezzlement charges, felony larceny, and felony conversion. His previous and new bond is now $800,000. He remains in jail. Indirect abuse and stealing from a child. This calls for that.
You're going to burn in a very special level of hell. A level they reserve for child molesters and people who talk at the theater. The special hell.
Thank you.